powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
A happy Wednesday, you guys. It feels like a long week with, I guess, a Sunday night game, so technically Sunday, but with Monday night football, I feel like it feels like Tuesday right now. Anyone else?
It adds an extra day to our week, that's for sure.
I guess that's
usually
me
we've
complaining.
Got the Friday, you know, getting ready for Sunday, all that, and, you know, we'll find a way to make Friday interesting like we always do.
Now, we're still going to have the huddle on Thursday, so there's still going to be a two-hour preview for the upcoming Monday night game between the Seahawks and Saints, and obviously we're going to sprinkle in you know, coverage of this game and a preview of this game throughout the week. In fact, I'm going to start with one right here. The Seahawks in the second half against the Steelers had a much better start. They came out running quite literally with just one pass, a single pass and a 10-play, 75-yard touchdown drive. Alex Collins kind of being at the forefront of that one, accounting for 61 of those yards. So we didn't see necessarily it pay off. It wasn't a complete comeback, but they put up 20 points in the second half. They had a really, really dominant third quarter. They came out swinging after really doing not much of anything in the first half. So Pete Carroll, I'm looking at it as, you know, on two separate occasions, he made it very clear what he wants to do with this team. The first was at the start of that third quarter, the first drive of the third quarter. That was Pete Carroll making it very clear. I want to run the ball. And I want to be more physical up front, and I need some balance here. I need to balance out because I can't look at Geno Smith and have him drop back all the time and pass against this pass rush right now. The second time he made it very clear was with Mike Salk on the Pete Carroll show the following Monday when he talked about kind of getting back to what they do best.
That's how we needed to play. That's how we need to play for the next couple weeks and on into the season. And really, Mike, that's how we've played when we're at our best for years. And there's a lot of people that want to, you know, gripe and complain about, you know, running the football and all that. But you saw, we scored 20 points in the second half. How many points do you need to score? I mean, 40 points in a game, that's pretty good, you know. And we did it by controlling the football game with the strength of our team.
So is that the team that Pete wants to be not just next week, not just this upcoming game against the Saints, but when Russell comes back?
I mean, I believe so. I don't think that this just I think there's an added emphasis to it when Geno Smith is your quarterback, but I truly believe in my heart of hearts that this is where Pete Carroll wants to go. And, you know, you talk about his history, you talk about everything that's happened and his overall philosophy. I mean, at this juncture, there is a lot on the line, and in his mind, I would assume that, hey, I've gone through this for, you know, a year and a half, you know, so far. And, you know, I don't feel good about it. I don't feel comfortable with this. I want to get back to the type of football that I know and that I know best and that I believe brings the best results, and that is running the football and not just, you know, doing it to balance things out, but to be a run-first-oriented team. And you know, there's been a clip that circulated of Brandon Staley talking about how, hey, the running game, you need it because it brings that level of physicality. Pete Carroll has said the same thing in terms of the circle of toughness. And then Brandon Staley also talked about how you don't need to run to have a great play action game. Well, Pete Carroll believes that you need to have a great running game to have a great play action game. You need to have a running game to be able to have your defense play better. It balances everything out. The running game is the answer in a lot of, you know, a lot of the problems that, in Pete Carroll's mind for this issue. And I'm not saying that in a negative way because, you know, right now you have to look at it and say, all right, you look at the second half of second half of the Pittsburgh game, things worked out for them. They balanced out. They were able to run the ball very, very effectively. The defense started playing better. I think that's, you know, to assume that the defense is going to play better because you run the football, that's a different conversation, but I can see how you go down that line of thinking. When I was at my best here in Seattle in the Legion of Boom and all those things, I had Marshawn Lynch and I had a great running game and we were the most physical team every single Sunday. And that's the style of football that Pete Carroll ultimately, I believe, wants to get back to, not just to survive the next 2 weeks and try to win, But I think moving forward for the rest of the season.
I guess the weird thing about it for me, and this isn't knocking Pete Carroll, who I think is a really, really good and successful head coach here, clearly, nor is it knocking a balanced attack, because I'm going to start with that point. There are absolute truths to the football principles he's talking about. And Seattle isn't the only team that's found success by incorporating more of the run. I think even teams that are pretty pass heavy, like Kansas City, have found a little more success, a little more balance when they've started running more. So I looked at the Kansas City Chiefs in week one or two. They got off to a rough start as well. They were 1-1, but obviously aren't where they want to be. They weren't running really at all. They had 18 carries in week two, something like 22 or 23 in week one. They've bumped that up to about 30 carries per week, and they haven't had below 100 rushing yards per game. Now, the win-loss record hasn't reflected all of that, but that's also been because of turnover problems with that team. Otherwise, they've been pretty efficient there, and so that certainly helped them. And when you look at the top five rushing teams in the league, only one of them, Cleveland, is at 500. That's the worst record at 500, 3-3. All the other teams have a minimum of 4 wins, including the undefeated Arizona Cardinals. So running the ball and having an attack on offense that can throw the ball or run at you is fantastic. It correlates pretty positively with the best teams in the league right now. I think what I worry about is looking at the past and saying, well, this formula worked, so I'm going to get back to it exactly. Because the difference is, in 2013, when it was working for you, well, you have Marshawn Lynch. Who outside of Chris Carson, who's on IR right now, have you found that is nearly as successful as Marshawn Lynch? Nobody. It's not without trying.
He's coming back, Stacey.
CJ Procise, Rashad Penny, Zach Brooks.
Don't roll over me,
Christian
Rashad
Michael.
Penny. Rashad Penny's coming back.
You had
Stacey.
Mike Davis on the practice squad. J.D. McKissick.
Mike Davis.
You signed Eddie Lacy as a free agent. You had Thomas Rawls as a free agent. How many guys have you cycled through? You've cycled through so many running backs, including guys drafted as high as like the third round. CJ Procise was the third rounder. And none of them have worked out for you, with the exception of Chris Carson, who, I cannot stress this enough, is not on the field for you right now. So I guess I'm kind of torn between thinking, you know what? In principle, this is right. This is exactly right. Yes, a balanced attack, being able to run the football, that has helped other teams in the league. Like I said, best running teams right now are the teams with the best records. But do you have the resources and weapons to do it? I have my own questions about it. And I don't think it's as easy as pointing back to 2013, which I don't think Pete Carroll's doing this, but I think some people do this, pointing back to 2013 and saying, oh, all you got to do is get a good defense and get a good run game. Sure, those two things are exceptionally valuable, but do you have the weapons to do that? You had Hall of Famers on that team.
Right, but I don't think that Pete Carroll is seeking balance here in this moment in time. Like, I truly believe that when you look at this game for the Saints, that Geno Smith might throw, if it goes according to plan, Geno Smith might throw 20 pass attempts in this game. Like, they are going in there to flex their muscle and to show that they can be physically dominant at the line of scrimmage, and to make it a point to try to own the time of possession. And as you said, these principles aren't bad. These aren't wrong things. But then there's the difference in execution. There's the difference in terms of truly balancing that out. And when you had Marshawn Lynch, you could be run heavy. You could be 2nd and 10 and hand the ball off to Marshawn Lynch and know that, you know, more times than not, that he's going to get you, you know, not only positive gains, but he's going to make big plays. You also invested heavily in that area of your offense, and that's where the majority of your resources offensively went into, was that running game. So just when you talk about this philosophically, I think that when you're talking about this approach, I don't believe that they have another choice over the next couple weeks. Will it work? And this Monday night game against the Saints, it's going to be fascinating, because the Saints are the second best run defense in the league. They're a good group. They get Marcus Davenport back. They get Quan Alexander back, who have been hurt for a good chunk of the year. So that part of it will be big for them. But can the Seahawks win despite that? Can they win at the point of attack despite that? And that's going to be really interesting. And you talk about this you know, conversation about running the football and getting back to everything and getting back to, you know, the good old days and you know, the philosophy that you believe in to your core. You know, haircut number three, this also stood out to me. This was a while ago, Mark Schlereth on with Brock and Salk, and here's what he had to say about where Pete thinks the NFL trend is going.
And I've talked to Pete about this specifically, not about his, you know, not about how people look at him or view him in the media, but just running the ball. And we had this conversation last year where he's like, Snake, man, it's coming full circle. We're going to get back to 90s football, just like, you know, like the dinosaur that you are type of thing, and how it used to be. And you know how cyclical the league is. He believes in that.
And Stacey, I know you're thrilled to hear like 90s is coming back.
Well, I already know the 90s are coming back. The 90s are back.
Right.
My closet will tell you that.
I forgot. You're a fashion expert here. Mm-hmm. You're fully aware. But also, it's coming back in terms of football. I'm not buying that. I don't see that trend. I don't see that in the way that this thing is going. But again, it comes back to that philosophy in terms of what Pete Carroll believes is best. And he believes that offensive football, in terms of the running game and all of that and how it's packaged together, like that is the gold standard of football. And that is fine in terms of how things are right now. When Russell Wilson comes back and when you have this offense, it the goal should be balanced. It should be matchup oriented. It should be also the realization, again, that you have a franchise quarterback who is one of the best in the game, and that you have to do the right thing in terms of maximizing not only his strengths, but also maximizing the opportunity that you have to put points up on the board. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of conversation about protecting your defense, protecting this defense, and the run game protecting the defense. And that, to me, only goes so far. And you need to ultimately put points up on the board. And if you can put 27, 30 points on the board in this league, you give yourself the best chance to win.
I'll say one final thought, and I know we've got a toss to headlines here, so I'll take 30 seconds, which is no one's going to be complaining if it works. If Pete Carroll wants to run the ball 52% of the time or 53% of the time, which they did in 2013 when they had a second-year quarterback, no one will be complaining if it works. The problem is when you refuse to budge when something doesn't work. So we'll see how this happens and how it carries out through this game against the Saints. It'll be fascinating to watch. It really will, because it's just one of my favorite kind of philosophical arguments in football. Right now, it's time for Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Kraken finished their opening road trip with a disappointing 1-3-1 record after falling last night to the New Jersey Devils 4-2. What's the real headline?
Oh, well, congratulations to the Seattle Sounders and the undefeated Eastern Washington Eagles, the Obi-Wan Kenobi for sports fans in the state of Washington.
This is our most desperate hour. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Your only hope. It's up to you guys. Sounders, Eagles, let's go.
Oh, man, we need you. We need you in a desperate way right now, and we need these other teams to wake up and bounce back in a hurry. I mean, obviously the Seahawks, they're coming up on a huge game against the Saints. Like, this is, I'm not going to say this is going to 100% determine your season, but it's pretty darn close to that point. And you're looking at a stretch where you needed to be 2-1, and if you go 1-2, man, that puts a major damper on your playoff aspirations.
I think you're done if you go 1-2.
You think so? So this to you is a must win.
Yeah.
This is a must win. And I'm not too far off from that situation, to be quite honest. So this is a big win that they have to have. You want to see the Kraken after a disappointing opening road stand or road trip or whatever you want to call it.
It's the road stand.
Road stand.
Road
okay.
stand.
It applies still in hockey? Road stand?
Road stand is just a concept.
It's a universal concept.
Yeah.
Okay, if you will. Look, the Kraken to me, if they can bounce back at home, win the home opener, I mean, it gets all the good vibes going again and everything. And no one's turning on this team. I mean, everybody's excited about what they can be. And I believe that there's a lot of slack that you give them, given the circumstances of them being a new expansion franchise. And Stacey, you're rocking the sweater.
I really need
it looks
them
great.
To do well, because I just got this jersey.
And it looks fantastic.
Sweater.
It actually makes me want to buy one really, really badly. But that's what you need. You need Washington football to turn things around. Washington State, everything that they're going through. It's just been a rough couple weeks here. Rough couple weeks.
Yeah, Kraken got 4 games in a row at home. They're playing a Canucks team that's 1-3. They're playing a Canadiens team that's lost their first four games. So you've got a couple opportunities here to stack some.
I'm also just going to tease that we've got ESPN's Greg Wyshynski joining us in 15 minutes-ish, and he's going to talk about whether or not it's time to panic. Hint, it's way too early to panic, but he'll start talking about what he's seen so far from this Kraken team.
Headline rewrites.
News this morning, as the fallout from Nick Rolovich's dismissal continues, an attorney representing Rolovich says they plan to sue the school for illegal termination. What is the real headline?
Man sues former employer after he violated the terms of his own contract. That's what this is to me. And look, now there's a little bit of questions that I have that I'd like to know. For instance, the implication from Kyle Bonagura of ESPN, who joined us yesterday, is that that religious exemption was granted to Rolovich and then was later denied by Pat Chun for reasons being that he couldn't accommodate all the exceptions and exemptions and everything that Rolo would need to be able to successfully run this program. All right, well, I'd be curious to know a little bit more about it. Do I think that Rolovich still violated his contract? Yeah, I do. I mean, even if the religious exemption was granted, no one deserves a job. You aren't entitled to a job, and you weren't forced to get the vaccine. The mandate was, look, if you want to work here, you're going to need a vaccine. You have the choice not to get it, but that also means forfeiting this job at a public university.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So go coach somewhere else if you want to. It's not forcing someone to do something.
When there's a lot of money on the table like this, was this a surprise to you? Was this a surprise to anybody? I mean, I'm genuinely asking, because would I have liked to have seen Nick Rolovich just kind of...
Oh, him suing? Was it a surprise?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, him walking away and, you know, kind of going quietly and finding another job and another opportunity somewhere else, I mean, would have been the most ideal thing, obviously, for Washington State. I mean, absolutely. But, you know, when you have this situation, I don't think it was ever going to be that easy. And when Rolovich is giving one-word answers and he's not really, giving it much of anything to anybody, well, you know why? Because probably he was talking to a lawyer of some kind and was trying to do this as PC as possible and knowing that this was probably going to be coming. And you're right, there is a clear contract, and putting it in those terms, it's very cut and dry. It's very simple. But at the same time, as I talked about yesterday, this was something that evolved, that changed in a way that no one foresaw coming. And when Nick Rolovich joined this Washington State football team, it was under a very different pretense. So things change, things evolve. It didn't work out, and we'll see how this goes. I don't know if Nick Rolovich is going to be successful in this, but the part that does intrigue me the most is at the very bottom. I mean, you know, you can poke holes or whatever at the top, but at the bottom, furthermore, the university's deceitfulness about being unable to accommodate Coach Rolovich, which is ultimately the reason he got fired, mm-hmm. right? After we know he was granted the religious exemption, had been granted, exemplified Chun's actions arranging a, quote, secret donor trip that he had Coach Rolovich attend at the height of the pandemic in July 2020. So I don't know what's going to come about this, but I wonder if there's enough things that Nick Rolovich can put out there that make the university look bad or make, Pat Chun look bad. And maybe it's a way to try and force a settlement. I don't know. But this is definitely going to be something to keep an eye on. And obviously, this is, as I've said before, there's this circus of everything about this conversation. But the thing that I care about the most, is those players in that locker room, how they overcome this, how they rally together, how can they do it, and feeling really badly for them because their season is... Hopefully it doesn't get derailed, but it's put in major, major question, and no one would blame them if this was the beginning of a, you know, big-time losing streak for the Cougs, and I'm hopeful that they can overcome it.
Well, from a purely football perspective, you certainly hope that it isn't, right? Take away all the context of the conversation, which is an important conversation, but strip all of that away, and you're looking at a football team that's won three straight against Pac-12 opponents. Are they second in the Pac-12 North, tied for first? I know they've got a really good conference record right now, facing BYU this weekend, and you certainly hope that they continue that because, I mean, right now it's pretty good for Coug fans looking at this record and what they've been able to do.
Yeah, I mean, three-game winning streak against some very good teams, good quality opponents. I mean, things were looking on the up and up for them.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. Boy, last night's American League Championship Series, the Astros stunned the Red Sox with a 7-run ninth inning to even that series at 2 games apiece. What's the real headline?
Our long-awaited national nightmare remains a real possibility. The Astros in the World Series.
Carlos Correa never really bothered me.
He was never somebody that really bothered me,
but now he is. His home run, you know, pointing to his wrist. Yeah, it's my time.
Yep.
As he's showboating around. I don't have a problem with guys celebrating, but you know, you've had a lot of success. It's been your time for a while. Also, in the midst of that, it's been a cheating scandal. So, I mean, I wouldn't be puffing my chest too hard. And then the other side of it is, you know, after this game, you know, post-game press conference, I think it was right on the field. You know, Carlos Correa, again, just, I don't know, man. He's just really rubbing me the wrong way. And this is honestly, it has nothing to do with what he's doing, but he's a member of the Houston Astros, and everything about them bothers me. And I'm hoping like crazy, that the Red Sox can finish this thing off, and please don't let the Houston Astros get to the World Series.
You know that live
just
long
do
enough.
Do us this one solid.
You know that live long enough to see yourself become the villain, die a hero, or live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Yes.
I feel like that is just the rule in sports. Any team, any player, anyone eventually becomes the villain if they win constantly, and then kind of like make that rightfully the villain when you're cheating, and that's where the Astros have found themselves, right?
Yes.
Like, there's nothing inherently wrong with winning, but like Tom Brady used to be this like plucky underdog, and then he became like the biggest villain, and the Pats became the biggest villain in football, and then he decided to go to Tampa Bay, and now we all like him again because he tweets funny things. All right, ESPN's Greg Wyshynski gonna join us next to talk everything Kraken, everything that he's seen. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us now is senior NHL writer for ESPN and co-host of the Puck Soup podcast, Greg Wyshynski. Greg, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we're really glad that you could join us because we're eager to talk to you, not just about the rest of the NHL, but specifically, obviously, the Seattle Kraken. So you have fans here in Seattle that know a ton about hockey, fans here who know nothing about hockey. And from the fans who don't know a ton, I'm seeing a little bit of panic to start the season. We know it's a little too early, but what are your impressions through, what, 4 games so far or so from the Kraken?
Well, I'm trying to get a handle on what the Kraken are supposed to be honest with you. You know, I thought that they were going to be a stout, solid defensive team, both in analytics and in actual stats. That hasn't necessarily been the case. If you look at the fancy stats, their expected goals against per 60 minutes at 5-on-5 at even strength. Is the ninth worst in the league right now, which is not something that I expected out of the Kraken out of the gate. And as I've watched a few of their games, I think I've seen at least three of them so far. I'm just trying to get a handle on what this team is supposed to be offensively too. I thought they would get a little bit more of a push and a little bit more production out of their defensemen. It's one of the reasons I thought that they could be a playoff team this year was balanced scoring from the forward group. And also the defense core, and I haven't necessarily seen enough of that yet either. So I'm still trying to, like I said, get a handle on the way they're going to play because I saw them against the Devils this week, and at times, I was joking to somebody before, they looked less like a Kraken and more like a jellyfish, just an amorphous blob that's trying to find some sort of form right now.
Yeah, it does feel that way, Greg, and how much of that is the idea that, look, this team hasn't been together for very long, they're trying to figure out who they are, and it's going to take some time for them to eventually really truly form from that blob into the Kraken that we all were expecting, is that a good enough excuse, Greg, or is it something where, hey, you don't hit the panic button, but this certainly is not the team we were expecting here?
No, I think that's a completely fair comment. And, I mean, if you look at the games played, they've played five. Vince Dunn's played three of them. Yanni Gourde played his first, you know, against the Devils this week, which can't be understated, the fact that one of the top players on this team has only appeared in one game so far. And, you know, they need to kind of like trial and error these lines and trial and error, you know, what they want out of their D at 5-on-5 and also hopefully get a few more stout performances out of Philip Grubauer. You know, it was a bummer to see Chris Driedger go on injured reserve when it looked like he was primed to get his first start against the Devils. So I was really interested to see if maybe he could have earned a few more starts with a strong performance against New Jersey. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone should be panicking at this point. I think this is a team that is trying to find chemistry with a whole crop of players that have never played together before. And don't underestimate the fact that, you know, when I hate constantly hearkening back to Vegas, but it's the only frame of reference we have for a modern expansion team under these rules. But Vegas opened up on the road, and then they immediately came home for what was a very, very emotional night, opening night. To start with five games on the road for the Kraken, I think kind of knocks you out of your routine a little bit. So, you know, I think getting home and getting in front of their home fans is only going to help the process.
Yeah, this has felt like the longest road trip ever, and we're definitely wanting them to get back here, and we're excited for this home opener, there's no doubt. But, you know, Greg, along those same lines, that same question that I have for you about this team and them working through some problems, when is that point where people should start to worry if they haven't figured things out by X amount of time that, hey, there might be some bigger issues than just, hey, you got to give them time because they really haven't played a whole lot together?
Well, that's more of a philosophical question than anything. And what I mean by that is when we saw the expansion draft, I think a lot of us were underwhelmed because they didn't leverage the draft and grab players in the same way that the Golden Knights did. And a lot of us were like, I don't know what this season is supposed to be. And then they went and they signed Grubauer. And then you combine that with some of the other unrestricted free agents they added to the roster, and you say to yourself, oh, okay, well, when you look at this team on paper and you run the numbers analytically, they kind of project out to be a playoff team. But, you know, the modus operandi for this management group was never necessarily to be a Stanley Cup finalist in year one. I mean, it just didn't seem like that was the track that they were on. So the long answer to a short question is, what is year one supposed to look like? I don't think any of us really know. I think if they're competitive, that's great. I mean, that means that they drafted well and it came together and they're well coached and maybe the good fans in Seattle get to see some playoff hockey. If they're not, that's fine too, because they're a franchise that is still building something. Mm-hmm. They don't even have a prospect pool necessarily yet. And having a high draft pick in at the end of year one wouldn't necessarily be the worst thing in the world for this team, given how strong this draft is going to be. So if it sounds like what I'm saying is that no matter what happens in year one, it's all gravy for this team, I kind of am. But I know at the end of the day, they want to at least be competitive. They want to at least be in the hunt. They want to give the fans something to buzz about, something to be excited about. They don't want to be falling into that traditional expansion trope of being and also ran in your first season, especially with the expectations set highly based on what Vegas did and based on the number of veterans that are on this roster right now.
Hey, Greg, I'm curious what you think about the people behind the scenes that they have here, just in terms of, I mean, Ron Francis and Dave Hakstol, because just to add context that I know you know about, but just to add it to this conversation, I mean, Seattle fans right now are looking at a Washington football team with a head coach and coaching staff they aren't sure about. They're looking at another coach outed at Washington State. They're looking at an uncertain situation between Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll with the Seahawks. And then they're looking at the Mariners excited, but there's also a lot to prove there, and you're wondering if you've got the right group. So I guess what I'm asking is, when you've talked to people about Hakstol and Francis or some of the big names behind the scenes, is the idea like, hey, they've got a good group there? Because I think the last thing Seattle fans right now in this moment want to feel like is that the issue is behind the scenes and not just luck of the draw with an expansion draft.
Well, first off, to show my East Coast bias, it just occurred to me that there are two Washington football teams in the country right now.
You know what, Greg? I'll tell you, when I was in college, I had an Italian professor like from Italy who moved. He taught at the University of Washington, and he was really upset because he thought that it was in Washington, D.C. And so he accepted the job and went there and was so mad about it. He like hated every class. He was so mad at us.
But to answer the hockey part of the question, I think Ron Francis has a lot of respect in this league. A lot of people, when he parted ways with Carolina, thought it was because of an impasse with the new owner. A lot of people felt that he wasn't able to do all the things he wanted to do while with the Hurricanes because of maybe some financial constraints by the team. And so there was always an anticipation that the next Ron Francis-led franchise was going to be a successful one because he was a well-respected executive, especially amongst his peers. The Dave Hackstall thing threw everybody. I mean, I'll never forget the day that it came out that he was going to be the first head coach of the Kraken because that was a name that certainly wasn't out there. I know the team took a lot of pride in having kept that information under lock and key. But he was a coach that, you know, didn't necessarily find the level of success that he wanted to find in his first NHL season after a really, really good run in the NCAA. And, you know, when talking to Hackstall during the offseason for a story for ESPN, you know, he said he learned from that experience and he's a different coach now than he was before. And you know, we've seen it time and time again in this league where sometimes a coach doesn't find the success that he wants in his first run through the league and then grows. I mean, Bruce Cassidy is a great example, the head coach of the Boston Bruins. I mean, that guy had like 15 years between gigs and then came back and became an extraordinarily successful coach after a really rough time in his first stint with Washington. So the idea that you can be better in your second time around is kind of a canon in the NHL, but by no means did, if you're asking what the hiring of Dave Hackstall meant outside the city and the team, by no means did the majority of the hockey world look at that hiring and say, oh, okay, they've got themselves the guy that you need behind the bench for an expansion team or the guy that's going to be there when the team is successful. I think that the jury is much more in on Ron Francis than it is on Dave Hackstall.
All right, he is senior NHL writer for ESPN, Greg Wyshynski. He's also co-host of the Puck Soup podcast. And listen, all of you Kraken fans, I know some of you are longtime hockey fans, so you're already in on this. If you're a new fan, we do recommend that you guys subscribe to that. Puck Soup is great. Even if you don't know a ton, it's really, really funny and entertaining. So thanks so much, Greg.
Much appreciated. Thanks for having me.
How can the Seahawks get a much-needed win over the Saints on Monday night? The Ringer's Danny Kelly joins us at 11 to answer that question. But first, the Nick Rolovich, Pat Chun saga continues. The former Cougs coach is taking legal action against Wazoo for discriminatory and vindictive behavior. We'll tell you everything you need to know next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show if you miss it. Subscribe to the Jake and Stacey podcast. It's on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. I was looking at it this morning to see if anyone left any shrimp emoji reviews. Nothing yet.
I think they got to be approved by Apple.
Gotcha. So well, they're so looking at these shrimp emojis and they're like, oh, I don't know. This looks kind of sketchy to me.
I don't think Apple really cares about us. They're like, whatever.
You're probably right. And even though you will continue to keep clamoring for them,
that's going to be our call to action now.
No, it's not.
If you're not really listening to the show,
shrimp emoji.
Yeah, leave us a shrimp emoji on Apple Reviews.
How does this how we know our day started again? I don't even understand.
Stacey because I told you
hallucinating
guys,
about
no,
shrimp.
I wasn't hallucinating. Oh, yeah, right. I had a dream, an actual dream the other night. You know when you have mundane dreams? Like, oh, I had a dream. I went to the store and I needed bagels and they were out of bagels. And that was like 9 hours of sleep. That was your whole dream. I had a dream that I went to look at our podcast review page on Apple. I don't know why I was dreaming that I did this. And someone just left a bunch of shrimp emoji as a review. And that was my entire dream. I was asleep for 8 hours. And that was the only part of my dream I remember.
Well, I mean, some people have mundane dreams. Some people have amazing dreams. I mean, I don't know about you, Curtis, but they don't happen often these days. But when they do, I mean, it's always a good time.
You know, you wake up like disappointed, like you have a dream that you're like really cool and popular, and you wake up and you're like, oh, I'm just me.
No, I haven't had that before.
All right. Again, you can subscribe to that wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcast, or on 710sports.com/podcast, where you can download it, but you don't have to. So if you don't want to take up space on your phone or whatever, you can just stream it. An update here on the Nick Rolovich, Pat Chun saga. Rolovich plans to take legal action against Washington State University. This story this morning, Rolovich is suing Wazoo for illegal termination. He cites discriminatory and vindictive behavior by AD Pat Chun. His attorney, Rolovich's attorney, says that Chun decided Rolovich would be fired as far back as April, which importantly was before the vaccine mandate went into effect. His lawyer adds that Chun's animosity towards Rolovich's religious beliefs will be thoroughly detailed in litigation. Very curious to see what comes out of there. And they're going to try to argue basically that Rolovich was fired not because he violated his contract, but because of his Catholic beliefs. Because if you can point to, well, he got a religious exemption, and not only that, but they already decided to fire him because of what he believed, then you are not fired with cause. So that's going to be the case that they're trying to make, whereas obviously Washington State and Pat Chun will say, we couldn't accommodate you and whatever you needed to do this job because you wouldn't get the vaccine.
Yeah, see, that part, I don't know how that one's going to work because, you know, again, I don't know how they'll go about it. They obviously have a plan, but, you know, and I'm not trying to get political here, but, like, the Pope also said that they were encouraging people to get vaccinated. So from that end, I don't know how it'll work. The part that intrigues me the most, though, is the fact that, you know, part of the things that, hey, we're not going to be able to accommodate you because you have to go to recruiting, donor functions. You have to do these other things other than just being in the locker room or being at the football facility. And that's just not going to work for us. Rolovich is highlighting a very specific trip that he took and a quote unquote secret trip that obviously I'm sure that they took out donors and they weren't advertising that because it was in the middle of a pandemic. And so I don't know exactly what Rolovich is going to be able to prove here through, you know, him and his lawyers. But, you know, this continues to be not only polarizing conversation, messy, but it is very, very messy. And, you know, Washington State, quite frankly, the other thing that you have to point to is that they don't want anything to do with something like this.
No.
I think they feel pretty comfortable with the idea that they're protected based off of the mandate and things of that nature that came down and that they were acting off of that mandate. But, this is also a university that isn't necessarily just filled with resources, right? Like the funding isn't just unlimited where, you know, some other universities around the country, you know, they could take something like this and it'd be no big deal to them. Right?
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I have a hard time. We'll see what happens and we'll see what unfolds with this. It would just be surprising to me, given that I have a hard time believing there aren't other devout people within this program, and that there is no way to me that Washington State didn't consult with a legal team before doing this. They knew that this would be making headlines nationally, potentially internationally. I saw this on BBC. It was on CNN. It was on Fox News. It was everywhere. They knew that this would be a top story for that day at the very least. And there's no way they didn't consult with a legal team to make sure they covered their bases and were actually firing him for cause. And to me, this seems like we'll see what comes out of it. It feels to me immediately, my initial reaction right now is just a bit of a reach, because it is hard for me to look around the fact that, like, look, you violated the terms of your contract. And I saw someone texting in and credit to them for a good question of, like, well, the terms of the contract changed. I would imagine that the contract wasn't amended to say, oh, and you need a vaccine. I'm guessing that for a public institution and a coach of a public school, the contract is you need to follow state law. Like, within all the other rules about the institution and rules about the football program are, oh, and by the way, follow state law.
Right.
And follow state mandates. So that is subject to being whatever state mandate comes out.
Yeah. And that's the part where, again, it gets messy. And that's the one aspect of this that's unfortunate is that as it's messy and as it goes through this process, the people that are left holding the bag is, yeah, the university's dealing with it and Pat Chun's dealing with this, but The players are dealing with this. The players are the ones that are dealing with the ramifications of all of this, and they're being asked to do something so incredibly tough, which is to play without their head coach, which is to play without their OC and four other position coaches. And I feel for them so much, so much, especially the seniors. They've been through a lot.
All right. Who is the NFL MVP right now? Is it Lamar? Is it Kyler? Is it a non-quarterback? That's kind of what I'm hoping for. That's coming up in four down territory at 11:13. First, though, the 2-4 Seahawks need a win over the Saints Monday night. So what's the key to get that done? The Ringer's Danny Kelly joins us next.